Welcome back, everyone, to the Cancel for Maintenance podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we are a show that takes a behind-the-scenes look into the gritty, non-glamorous life of aircraft maintenance. We share some laughs and parts of wisdom, all in hopes of giving you a split-second relief in your day that can hopefully prevent a mishap. I am your co-host, Six.
I'm MVP.
And our third host, Shoreline, is actually remotely monitoring our audio, making sure our faces stay fit for radio. We are actually in a pseudo studio. That makes the pseudo studio.
Yeah. I got to tell you, this is kind of weird because I'm watching you do the intro and all that stuff real time. And it's been a while since I've got to witness that.
Right. No, it's been a while since we ourselves have not been recording remotely. And fortunately enough for us, to do this in person is actually during an expo. So one of our bonus episodes, we mentioned that we are going to be attending the High Healy Expo. And this is day one of us attending. And so far, it's been a very awesome experience, to say the least.
Yeah, it's really the magnitude of it. You know, I've never been to a convention of any type in my life. And Six, I know you have been to a few conventions, be it Comic-Con or whatever else, but the scale or the magnitude of this is, it's I'm awestruck because it's covers three floors. So the main expo floor, right? All the vendors, and they've got, you know, all their booths set up and aircraft scattered all over the place and different simulators and such. But then the second floor is like symposiums and learning forums and different speeches going on and XYZ. And then the third floor is like news media and other conference rooms used by magazine editors and whatever else there are, online bloggers or something. There's something happening everywhere.
Oh yes. And we just it really took us pretty much all of the first day to really just fathom the scale of everything, because unlike a Comic-Con, which is majority of the experience that I've been to for these types of shows, you maybe get like two tables, like 4x6, maybe 4x10, and just kind of back curtains and people selling stuff. Once in a while, you have a booth or two with maybe four of them together. But these ones, man, like you can tell, like the people here, they came to show up and show out. Like as MVP mentioned, you have you have three floors worth of content, worth of learning, worth of recruiters, vendors, all kinds of stuff. And like some of these vendors, like, they brought like full on offices with them
too. Yeah, like cubicles and living room furniture.
Yeah, coffee makers, all kinds of stuff. Like, and this is the kind of scale that we ourselves have not really been privy to. I mean, we've seen pictures of it, we've seen video clips of it, but we've never actually physically seen one. So this was like a mind blowing experience for all of us. And especially to see some of these helicopters that we ourselves have not seen or have heard of for some time. And this is really kind of like the time to do it. And I believe a lot of the companies here, they like to use this moment as like their unveiling, I guess it would be called, right? Like, mm-hmm. Check out our newest gear, check out our newest initiative, check out our concept art or something like that. And I think the ones that really came to show up and show out were like the big name brands, like Bell Helicopters or Airbus and whatnot. And it's just been mind blowing. So day one, it was really just us, like just trying to soak it all in, really. And I feel like we blasted through it fairly fast. Like, we just wanted to kind of get a roundabout idea of everything was like, yeah, there was a map. It told us where to go and what things were at, but just really like absorbing what was all there. It was just insane. And I feel like if you were just going to come to this on one day, you might have to plan specifically, like, this is what I'm going to see, this is where I'm going to go. Because if you just kind of went in blind, you would get distracted. Like, you're a squirrel brain. At least me, I squirrel brain.
You will. And if you stop to talk to anybody for any amount of time, I mean, that eats up those moments to get around in a day. Think about the speeches being given, those symposiums. They were each an hour, some 2 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
So if you sit in for one of those, and mind you, a broad range of spectrum of speeches being given, anything from how to run, what's the bigger one? A Fortune 100?
Is that a Fortune 500, I think.
Fortune 500. One of those, running a large scale aerospace company, all the way down to, safety of flight and how to pre-flight a helicopter, essentially. It's like everything in between. So if you sit in for those, and I highly recommend you do, we sat in on one of them today, and it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But that eats up the precious time to get around. So it's like you said, you can squirrel it really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot to see. It's really cool.
And squirrel we did, even though we just came to just kind of do like a snapshot of the whole thing, just to kind of soak in where everything is, what it's about, where they're located, how big is it, and all this and that. I think we just kind of perused around the area for maybe like 3 hours, and we squirrel brain hard. Like every time we see, like, ooh, that looks cool. Oh, this looks awesome. What's this one about? Right. And then people are so eager to tell you stuff about what they have, what they brought, what they could potentially do. Not just for pilots, but for everyone in the whole scheme of aviation, like down to mechanics, the sellers, the recruiters, the inspectors,
even manufacturing of hardware, bearings, parts. We had, you had companies here that are into the metallurgy, right? They had solid blocks of aluminum or titanium or whatever, and they say this is the raw material of which we make these parts, and they have it all laid out.
Mm-hmm.
Next to it with the milling process. They had one a welding setup there, but it was like a small, like you would take AOG if you had to weld on the road, and I can't think of an instance where I would have to use a welder in an AOG situation. But it exists,
right?
And I
think with the AOG, that denotes what really caught our eyes, was because you can totally tell we were mechanics or are mechanics, because the first things that really caught our attention besides the aircraft itself were like all the various tools that we could be potentially using or had a potential to use. Like I don't know how many times we stopped and said, like, you know what, this would have been fantastic 15 years ago, or this would have been a great thing to have when I was on the road. And some of the newer concepts, like scanning your key, it tells you what tool went out, who took it, what plane it's going to. And for bigger operations, this may be old news, but for other places where like we're slowly starting to absorb the standards and regulations of other civil air authorities, it was really cool to see.
Yeah, actually, that's one thing I learned about today. When we were talking to, I can't remember the name of the business. I got the business card.
Mm-hmm.
Piper Chin.
I can't remember either.
Anyways, so their development is covering multiple areas of jurisdiction, a lot of EASA territory in Europe, and then FAA here in the States. Well, I learned today through them that in Europe, it's illegal for you to use personal tools on aircraft. Now, I thought to myself, well, maybe I get it in a shop setting, right? You have a home MRO, main base or whatever. Okay, you got your toolbox there. But what about the guys that go on the road? And so we saw today where there's travel toolboxes that have been etched, and they have the numbers, the space and the foam is etched with that tool's number. And then the tool itself is etched, but even that electronic, that travel log box, travel toolbox is electronically controlled.
Yep.
So you have to take that with you from whenever you're traveling on the road in Europe. Smart idea, but pretty mind blowing.
Yeah, really.
And I kind of wonder, for a lot of maintenance facilities, would you be able to afford that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty big sticker shock right out the gate.
It would, but then, like I think we were, as we were going perusing down the expo, we were constantly saying like, well, yes, this is expensive, or yes, this will be an upfront cost kick in the stomach, but what's the opportunity cost you're giving up, right? Like, okay, I spend however many thousand to get this, but then I save on X amount of money on lost tools, or I save X amount of money on something that broke because we had to make do, or whatever the case may be, right?
Yeah, it's true. So if my operational cost to me every year for lost tools and XYZ is $150,000, or I could spend $50,000 on, and I'm sure it's more than that in total, but like $50,000 on this electronic tool setup.
Yeah.
Spend 50 and I've saved a perpetual 150, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of like the theme. I don't know if that was an intentional theme, but that's kind of like what we were getting out of all of it. Cause yeah, a lot of stuff had a very hefty price tag for the stuff that we're disclosing. But ultimately, as us, especially from the mechanic side of the house, is like, well, it's either we shell it now and prevent it later, or we maintain what we're doing and then suck the cost whenever it happens. And speaking of which, like there was one panel we sat in on, and we were kind of going, MVP and I were talking about just how much that relate 100% to what we do on a regular basis, and the speaker was gearing more towards pilots and CFIs, but I feel like a lot of that stuff really sends home for mechanics as well. And the topic of that session was called Hope is Not a Strategy. And that really caught our attention, because how many times have we as mechs, we as controllers, and we as people who are actually on the line making flights happen, have we jokingly said to ourselves like, oh, this flies on hopes and dreams. But how many people like actually believe that, right?
Right, or that is the strategy. Like, just, hey, can you do one more? Like, you're already wrung out from a 15-hour long day on the line, and your boss comes to you and says, hey, can you do just one more? But you're exhausted, famished, whatever. You haven't, yep, you haven't eaten, you haven't slept, or and with each passing aircraft, the rate of risk just exponentially increases.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to know when to say no. You're right. And so, you know, contingencies, they kind of ended with a quote from Benjamin Franklin, said he who lives on hope
will die fasting. Yep. And I love that one. And the picture he had to go with, it was Orville Wright. And I forget the name of the second person.
It was General. I can't remember. It was a general for the U.S. though.
Yeah. So, in a nutshell, it shows like a wreck that Orville Wright and this passenger was on, killed the passenger, and then Orville had like two fractures in his legs, possibly handicapped for life. Lucky to be alive.
Yeah, broken ribs, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. So, and what that session really sung to us about is, as MVP said, is like you get a lot of individuals who try to reframe a bad decision because it had a good outcome. And we see this time and again. I'm sure every single mechanic in the world knows what we're talking about in this. It's like, you did something bad, but good came out of it. So now that becomes the norm. And then people just kind of accept the bad as good. There's plenty of times we've done it. I'm sure there's plenty of times a lot of mechanics out there have done it. Like, we shouldn't do this, but it works.
Right. Well, it's the... We make decisions based off of the perceived outcome.
Yes.
Like what was the one example you used? Driving home drunk.
Yes.
Okay, well, I got drunk at the bar, and I got in my car, and I drove home. And I made it home, and I didn't hurt myself, and I didn't hurt anybody else. So was that a good decision? No, but it had a good outcome.
Yeah.
However, it's the nine times out of 10, that'll be the way it is, you know, no issues. But it's that 10th time. And it's just like, well, so it just, you know, Murphy's Law, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if it can't happen, it will happen. Yeah, but we're kind of looking at it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was basically, no, you weren't right 9 out of 10 times. You were wrong 9 times And it finally caught up to you on the 10th.
Yep.
With dire consequences.
Yep. And I think that's something that we as Max and everybody in the whole aviation community really needs to sit down and absorb. And I'm glad that this session existed for us to really reaffirm, I guess, what we were believing. Like, it's only wrong when bad happens. Like, no, it's been wrong. And just because, air quotes, this is how we've always been doing it, doesn't make it right. And this individual, although he was a pilot, it pretty much like rang true to across the board for all things aviation. Like, just because a bad decision had a good outcome doesn't instantly turn it into a good decision, right? Or even though we don't expect, we don't come in there with bad intentions, the perceived outcome is kind of like what ultimately drives our reason to make that bad decision. He gave an example as well about flying in adverse weather. Like, weather's rolling in, it's pretty bad, but you have this high revenue flight that you have to hit. Are you going to make that flight? Most pilots who really ride and depend on this paycheck was like, I got it, right? And they won't think twice about it. Or if they kind of psych themselves out, like, it's less than ideal, but I can do it. I can make that happen. This guy over here can't, but I sure can. And then if you gamble, roll the dice, and you do make it, now you just gave yourself false confidence. And I feel that rings especially true with Mex, because they've gotten away with it so many times that they feel they've gamed the system.
Right. We've talked about this before, where it's you don't have the right tools to do the job, but you've made it work. Mm-hmm. And it's succeeded every time. So that becomes the new norm. Because and management's ignorant enough to the reality of the situation, or willfully ignorant to the situation, and they play on your ego. Come on, you hit a home run for us before. You're the best. You can do it. And we're dumb enough as Mexico. I am the best. I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Versus just going, no, look, I did it one time. That was a bad decision, and it worked out well. But it might not always turn out that way. So why don't we just get the right tool for the job, mm-hmm. and move on with it? That's why support equipment engineering exists, you know?
Like, yep.
To do the job the right way.
And I'm honestly glad that we actually heard that from a pilot, because most times when we hear trying to take bad decisions to make them good ones, that we'll hear this notion from a pilot saying, hey, we got to go. We got to make this happen. This is a higher rev flight. And most times, you know, you will have this pilot or this air crew who are very antsy to get in the air. And as Mex, that's kind of like how I saw it. Like, okay, pilot just wants his 400K paycheck or whatever, right? But after hearing this individual and hearing his perspective of it, he's making a bad decision because bad decisions being forced on him, and it kind of trickles down from there.
Yeah, so, and what was really interesting, what he pointed out, is that he goes, you have to recognize in yourself that you're susceptible to the inputs of others.
Yes.
And your inputs affect the decision-making of somebody else. So you have to have enough self-knowledge, mm-hmm. to recognize when that's being forced upon you, when your ego is being used against you,
mm-hmm.
to achieve a goal that at the end of the day could harm you or somebody else,
mm-hmm.
you know? And you just got to say no. And I really liked where he talked about, look, and he's a pilot, right? So he said, if the flight manual tells you if under this situation, land immediately, it's not milk it out for the next mile, 'cause we're only a mile from the airfield. It's landed immediately. Mm-hmm. Whether that's in a baseball field at the park or in the median on the highway,
mm-hmm.
land immediately. Don't risk it. And he said this, you'll never get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I'm sure people will talk crap. Let them. He goes, you did what was right, and nobody can hold that against you. And the big one being the FAA, mm-hmm. or EASA. They're definitely not going to chastise. They might burn your employers for forcing you to do something unsafe, but you yourself did what was right by the manual. And I really like where he said, and if the manual is wrong, we can change that. we can change that. If the manual's wrong, we can change it. But otherwise, do as the manual says.
Right.
And I know Six and I have mentioned that on here. Look, as long as you're following your maintenance manual, regardless of result, especially in a negative one,
mm-hmm.
you can't be burned or raked over the coals because you made a good decision and it had a bad outcome. And that's another thing. Not all good decisions have good outcomes. You're like, oh, it was another drunk driving scenario. Okay, MVP is drunk. He gives his keys. He recognizes it. He gives his keys to Six, who hasn't been drinking. Six drives MVP home, but unfortunately, brakes went out of the car. You ran the intersection. You slid through the intersection and hit a pedestrian or whatever and killed the pedestrian.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a good decision for MVP to give his keys to Six because he was inebriated? Yes, but you still had a bad outcome.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of the whole thing with it, right? What's the other saying, Six? The road to good and the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Something yeah. like that.
I honestly thought you were going to do a Warhammer quote, man, where you said like, hope is the first step to disappointment.
Yeah. But that fits in the situation too, right?
Yeah.
Hope is the first step to disappointment. And it all comes down to planning and contingencies.
Yes.
Something, again, we've harped on, but nice to hear somebody else talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you're only as good as your contingency is, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like as we mentioned, like this speaker was a pilot. So I mean, for those out there who have this huge angst against pilot, take it with a grain of salt. But we highly emphasize that although this was a pilot giving a pilot's perspective, we as MEX, we as inspectors, we as auditors, we as management, we 100% relate to this because this applies to literally every aspect of the industry that is aviation. And there's classes exactly like this and touch all kinds of different subjects here at the expo. So although at the time this recording releases, the expo would have been long over, but we highly encourage that you actually go to one of these and really kind of sit there and absorb some of these materials, because these are guys who have they were the statistic that made the lesson capable, like they were alive to tell the lesson, I guess, or they've have readily available access to this that is not, and they can kind of filter it out in easier to swallow chunks, so to say.
Right.
And then if you're an IA or a instructor pilot or whatever the case may be, attendance in this and some of these classes are actually credits for you to maintain those certs. So another good reason for you guys to go to this expo or for expos like this. And fancy enough, like this High Heli Expo is actually the last time it'll be happening as the High Heli Expo. I'm sure I'm butchering this up, but they worded it way better than me. They more in a nutshell, High Heli is rebranding themselves and they're rebranding the name of their expo. So this year is the last year it's going to be called High Heli Expo. And then from next year on, it's going to be called Verticon. So to keep in concept of the whole vertical flight notion. Now, some can argue like, well, regular airplanes take off vertically, like, but not straight up.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Because even, I guess you could, I mean, we did see some like, what was that thing called? The Whisk?
The Whisk? Something like, yeah. It was
Whisk
like
or Wisp or something. It was yellow. It had 10?
10, I think. Yeah.
10? No. Double that because it had propellers. It had propellers in the front and back. So there was like 20 small little motors on this thing. It was square in shape. So if anybody ever spent any time in the Middle East, they have these little square shoe boxes there called casas.
Yeah.
And it had that body style to it, but it had 20 motors.
It was something like that. I know it was an obscene amount.
It was, Let me pull up. I took a picture of it. Let me pull it up and see what I can find. It was. Hold on. Well, this is. I'm looking at the model. So the model had. Well, maybe I way over exaggerated. The model has six on each wing.
Wow. So, and that was what, four wings, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is even a different model. Yeah. So it had multiple wings. It was. Oh, no, no. That was a different one. That was that guy. That was that little drone.
Oh, gotcha.
This one has 12 total, six on each wing, it's three in the front. And leading edge, three in the trailing edge.
Jeez.
But they rotate 90 up and then rotate 90 back to flat to fly. So you have 12 vertical for takeoff, and then you have six pullers and six pushers when you're flying. Like,
and they're not nuts, man. And I honestly never would have expected to see that anywhere in the world, not even as a concept art. And so I had to see a physical representation of this aircraft, whether it flies or not, I don't know, but just to see it there, like, wow, look at this kind of concept that's going on. So, like, we've talked about this some previous episodes with other guests, like, hey, what's some good ways to get jobs? And one of the things they mentioned is to go to trade shows, go to expos, go to conferences, go to career fairs. And we say this with, like, full intent, like, if you want exposure, if you want knowledge of what the state of the industry in a nutshell, realistically, you would go to stuff like this. And especially if you're into helicopters or anything in the sense of vertical flight, be it helicopters or drones, even, this is 100% the place you want to be. Because I think we've ran into three recruiters, I want to say, at least three recruiters.
Yep.
JS firm was definitely one of them. We'll probably have them on for an episode to kind of explore more about how to find aviation jobs. There's two other recruiting groups. I can't remember their names off the top of my head, but they were talking about, like, how they hire for specific types of aircraft mechanics or DOMs. Even I think we saw a chart that had, like, a bunch of DOM openings, and which I honestly
they had some DOMs, but they had. They had air safety. They had mechs, techs, inspectors. They had environmental control specialists. They had AVI specialists. They had structures. I mean, it was quite a list of stuff.
Oh yeah,
you know.
And I think one of the most prevalent ones we saw there, besides, like, the top notch bosses, were, like, law enforcement and firefighters. I think, like,
oh, it was a big presence of firefighters.
Yeah, I think, like, a good third of the expo had about that amount of law enforcement, firefighting, or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, insane amounts. So, like, again, like, if you're looking to do some type of law enforcement or EMS, that's what it was. Law enforcement.
Oh, yeah. Medevac stuff.
Law enforcement, firefighting, and EMS. Freak galore. And I think, matter of fact, that speaker that we were talking about previously was an EMS pilot. So
I believe so. Yeah. He would talk. He talked. I get. And he flew a lot in South America, it sounded like, as yeah. well.
Or maybe that's his examples that he could. Oh, talk openly about? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Maybe he was cartel pilot. Who knows? Running stuff for El Chapo.
Maybe. But again, like, day one was awesome. We highly encourage people, like, to go to stuff like this. The shell out may be a little over your price range for majority of the expos that may offer stuff like this. But I highly say, like, if you know when it's coming, definitely put that on your calendar to attend, because we just attended this day one and we were just bombarded with so much information. We barely had any headspace left to soak it all in. So we kind of just did, like, a quick lap, for lack of better words, around everything, just to kind of see what's all there. And then we could kind of narrow our perimeter as we figure out, like, okay, what is... what's the new and up and coming? What's been happening? What have we not seen yet? And hopefully, like, what stuff is pertinent to us as mechs, you know? So Yeah. Fine. What do you guys think, man? Like, what have you guys been to as far as expos? What have been your experiences? What sort of stuff would you like to share? I do highly recommend bringing some of your own snacks.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Comfortable shoes.
Definitely comfortable shoes, especially if it's a big exposition, like exposition expo, or a trade show where like the exhibit floor stretches like four rooms, essentially.
Oh, and bring a copy of your resume or several copies of it, because there was a job fair.
Yes.
On the third floor as well. So if you're in the market, you know, looking around to see what else is available, they even had that going on.
Yes. Matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because they actually had printers at the career fair floor where, say, like, you know, you ran out or you didn't print any. If you just have, or you don't want to carry large stacks of paper everywhere, if you just have like a hard drive or something, they had, at least this expo did, they had a computer and a printer where you could just plug your thumb drive in there, burn off a couple copies, mm-hmm. and then just hand them out to the places you want to explore.
And they even had seminars on, you know, how to interview, how to write a resume, how to best ways to reach out to your to recruiters and things like that. Even if you are a recruiter, the best way to reach out and how to find top-notch employees, like it they cover the basis in these conventions, man. I mean, it's all aspects of the industry. Pretty interesting.
Most def.
I think the only thing we didn't see a whole lot of was military.
No. Matter of fact, you're right. There was maybe one section that we saw was military related, and that was like military to civilian transition, like how to help land yourself a civil aviation job, which I don't know if we just missed it or what, but
yeah, well, that too, I guess I was more leaning towards like military assets on the floor.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah.
They had, yeah, like CBP was there, right? Border Patrol, that's and stuff, but they didn't really have any of their assets. Coast Guard did have a helicopter in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's probably different trade shows that happen for military specific, because they're going to be showcasing different systems,
yes,
than what the general public's allowed to see.
Right.
That convention's probably invite only.
Right. Or closed loop, right?
Closed loop, yeah. Only certain people are in the know on those ones.
Right. Anything else we like to share about the expo, Mr. MVP?
Mind blowing. Really a lot to take in on the first day. Really looking forward to see what happens tomorrow. But it's been pretty fun interacting with some people on the floor. So I hope we get to do more of that.
Most definitely. And hey, let us know what you guys think. Like, what sort of stuff do you expect to see at an expo? What sort of question would you like to ask us about going there? Things of that nature, or like what's some of the stuff that you say that we should walk in there with. Let us know in the comments, social medias, our email, our website. The absolute best way to get in contact with us is through our Discord channel via Patreon. We have all sorts of conversations like this, and realistically we have them to fully thank for allowing us to have this opportunity to be invited to this expo. So big shout out to all our patrons out there for affording us the opportunity, pretty much being recognized enough to come and do stuff like this. On that note, hey, we thank you all again for listening, and we see you all on the next one. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
We would like to take this time to thank our patrons for supporting our show and allowing us to make episodes, maintain our gear, and create merch for all of our listeners. With special thanks to Erica Lamont, Chris Hawkins, Eric Shaw, Dan Schubert, Ryan Frushauer, Kyle Keir, Mike Sherwood, Caleb Stockhill, and Jennifer Brofer. Thank you all so much for your support and patronage. If you like our show, please support us on Patreon. You'll receive awesome perks like access to our private Discord, discounts and early access to our merch, first glimpse of our comics and other projects, and so much more. You can further support us and show off your prowess as an aircraft specialist by visiting our shop at councilformaintenance.com. If you like classy or rugged watches, visit our affiliate, Rockwell Time, at rockwelltime.com. Use the code CX, the number 4MX, to save 10% off your total order. If you have suggestions for the show or you'd like to be a guest on the show, send us a line on our contact us section at councilformaintenance.com, and we'll do what we can to get both your ideas and yourself on the show. Please support us on social media like Facebook at Council for Maintenance, Instagram at CANX for Maintenance Podcast, or Twitter at CXMX Podcast. Please check out our new comic series on the Tapas app. Like, share, subscribe, and comment on our comics. Let us know what you think. Thank you all so much for your support and listenership, and we will catch you all next time.